You know, some Sundays it just feels like there is no sermon needed after the singing. But unfortunately for you this morning, I prepared a sermon, so it's going to be preached. So history is a curious thing. What gets reported and recorded is curious. Who does the reporting and the recording is curious. And how the different stories compare or don't compare is curious, depending on who has done the reporting or the recording. Now I'm talking about world history, about political history, church history, and then there's family history. Family history adds a whole other layer. So think for a minute about your own families. Think about what is the lore in your family. What are the stories that are told over and over again? And by whom are they told? And what are the stories that are not told? And by whom are they not told? And think for a minute about what happens to a story depending on who it is that is doing the telling. I have 6 siblings, and I guarantee you that depending on who is telling the story, it sounds like a completely different story. So how do those stories compare or contrast depending on the teller? And why is it that some stories don't get told? And why is it that some stories do? It seems as though with family history, at times, there's this feeling that our history is private. Nobody else needs to know about this. That should raise a little red flag. Nobody else needs to know about this. There is also a sense, though, sometimes with family histories, that if somebody tells something over and over again, they're using it for a purpose, and what is that purpose? Are they using it for their own gain? Are they using it in order to hurt someone over and over and over again? What is the purpose in telling a family story over and over again? It's curious. Now, there's another aspect, particularly that comes out of our culture, and that is the issue of whining. When does the retelling of a family story or part of your family history turn into whining? Think about it. It's a very North American thing. It really is. And the disturbing part of that is that we know that there are oppressed groups of people who absolutely cling to being able to tell and retell their history. And I know you've heard it like I have heard it, this kind of implicit rhetoric that goes on about how they ought to be over it by now, and by retelling it, there's some kind of whining going on. I don't think that's what's happening when that happens. I think the telling and the retelling and the retelling serves a deeper purpose. And it's a similar thing with congregations, which is why we're talking about it today. There is an aspect of telling and retelling one's history that is in order to remind us that we never want to repeat that part of the history. It is a reminder that we never want to be there again. And so we tell it and we retell it. Now, based on some of that criteria, you could say the Bible is full of whining, because there are stories in here that get told and retold and retold all throughout. And so we take the Exodus story and we tell it and we retell it and we retell it. And we do that because we never again want to be enslaved as a people. The wilderness story, the wandering for 40 years, we tell that story and retell it and retell it because we never want to forget that no matter how we feel in the midst of it, God is with us every step. The destruction of Jerusalem, we tell and we retell and we tell it again because we never again want to be fooled into believing that God is confined or contained in a building. So we tell and retell as a way of reminding ourselves. On Friday night, there were about 12 of us that joined in the Friday night walks with the ceasefire strategy. We walked through East Oakland. I've never done that before. It was quite an experience. We walked at night, and all told, there were about 50 people that were on the walk that night. And as I was walking around that neighborhood, trying to make connections with people who were on the streets out at that time of night, this is what kept going through my head. There is a bomb in Gilead, over and over again. The other thing that kept going through my head is, go down, Moses. Go down to Egypt land. Tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. That's the other thing about why we tell and retell our history. It allows us to lament. Is it a different situation? Sure. It's a little different than the Exodus. But you know what? The songs that came out of that time, the lamenting that has occurred, is exactly what we need when we walk through East Oakland today. It is a way that we can lament. It's a form that it gives us so that we can lament what is. Now, in this text that we read on Lamentations, there's an interesting thing. In the first part of it, Bonnie read about this picture of the elders of Jerusalem. They are sitting on the ground in silence. They've thrown dust on their heads. They've put on sackcloth. The young girls of Jerusalem have bowed their heads to the ground. This is a description of a ritual. This was a built-in ritual for the community. The elders would go out in public and sit on the ground in sackcloth for everyone to see. And that was part of how they lamented. It was public. It was also a ritual. And that is what we've been talking about, how we need rituals as a community in order to facilitate our lamenting. So let's talk for a minute about history, telling and retelling our history. The first Sunday that I arrived here at Montclair, I preached a sermon to you in faith. I preached words from Isaiah where God says, "You are precious in my sight, and I love you." I preached that to you because I'd heard a lot about you And it seemed like it would be true for you. And it also seemed like you might need to hear that, that you are precious. And you know what? It has been true. It is true. You are precious as a community. We have gotten to know each other. I have heard your stories. You have heard my stories. We have built up trust in each other. We've been able to say some hard things back and forth. We've done a lot of hard work together. And what I have learned in my time here is that history can be painful. You have had some moments in your history that have not been fine moments. And that is okay. It doesn't feel okay, but it is okay. There is not a single congregation in the United States today that has not had some pretty unfine moments. Not a single congregation. So if you think you can go out and find a congregation that is free from conflict, good luck. I am interviewing churches right now as I seek a call. And boy, do I irritate some of them because I don't say, has there ever been any conflict in your congregation? My question is always, tell me about the conflicts that have happened over the years. And you can see the committee look at each other like, oh, who wants to tell? And then one by one, the stories come out. It's because we're imperfect people. We make up the community. And it is okay. And part of what we need to do is tell and retell some of that history. For this congregation, the years between 2003 and 2008 were not the finest moment. Some things happened during that time that were fine. But there were some other things that happened that created a great deal of conflict. There was a perfect storm when two events converged. The first event was realizing that this sanctuary was not retrofit for earthquakes. Now, every pastor knows, if you want to seek out a storm, if you're a little bored and you want a storm, suggest a change of something in the sanctuary, and you'll have your storm. In the old days, when I first started, it was all related to the color of the carpet in the sanctuary. Or the pew cushions. That was the other big one. Things have evolved since then. But for those of you who were not here in those days, this sanctuary was very different. It was dark wood and brick. And there were brick planters that lined the sides of the sanctuary. And there were living plants in those brick planters. And you can imagine, for some people who had had memory upon memory that happened within that version of the sanctuary, it was a deeply painful thing to think about having to do any changes. Deeply painful. The other perfect storm that contributed at that time was the recognition by first the finance group and then eventually personnel that this congregation could no longer afford a dedicated staff person to do drama. So the decision was made to eliminate the drama position, and in that position was a woman who had served this congregation and been a part of this congregation for almost 30 years, absolutely beloved, Reverend Sally Juarez. She did not like the decision that was made, and many of you did not like that decision that was made. And the result of that was a storm, huge storm. Many people were hurt, things were said, regrets happened, and it was not a happy time for this congregation. Now, as with many conflicts, you know this from your own families, sometimes when you go through a conflict, some good can come of it. Some good did come of that perfect storm. Eventually, the organization Pace Beni was brought in to do some training on healthy communication. We established a team called the Healing and Reconciliation Team that was for people to come and share their feelings, their thoughts, ways that they had been hurt in order to promote healing. That group still exists, the Healing and Reconciliation Team. And a lot more intention was given toward communication and how we do it as a congregation. The pain and the hurt was deep. I wonder what might have been different in that time had we been able to lament. Because you know what? At the heart of all of that, if you clear away all the debris that was flying around, at the heart of it was deep sadness, sorrow, grief on every single person's part. That was the heart of it. But because we didn't have a way to regularly express that, it became a storm. And so part of why we want to get to a place where we can lament communally is because, you know, we don't need storms to enliven our lives. There's enough going on that gives us life. We want to be able to care for one another in those feelings. So I am telling you this today because we have a unique opportunity. The unique opportunity is that we get to create some history here. This year, 2013, is a year of transition for this congregation. Katie Morrison and I are both in temporary positions. My contract with you ends on July 25th. You have feelings about that. I have feelings about that. Now, I don't want to spend the next 5 months saying goodbye, so we're not going to do that. When I have a date of when I'm going to move, I will let you know, and we can start saying goodbye. Until then, we have some things we may want to lament about. And the reason I want to encourage the lamenting is because I don't want this to turn into anger or frustration or blame or any of those things that are absolutely not helpful to the community. If we can master the art of lament together, we can avoid all that stuff. It doesn't have to be that way. You have elected a pastor nominating committee that is stellar. You can trust them absolutely with having your best interest in mind. I trust them that they have your best interest in mind. So between now and when the future is clear and we're aware of it, lament if you need to. I am willing to hear your lament. All of the people sitting around you are willing to hear your lament. But name the lament piece. Don't go to the blame or the anger or the whatever it is. Name the feeling. What are you sad about? What are you grieving about? What do you feel sorrow about? From that lament place, I think rich things can happen. So let's create history together this year. Let's create a different kind of history, because I just told you some of the past history because we don't want to repeat it again, right? We're reminding ourselves we never want to be there again if we can help it, and we can. So let's do it. Amen.